When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, our friend Craig Gilbert, who we haven't spoken to for quite a while. Craig, good to talk to you.
It's been busy.
You've been very busy. First of all, before we get to the election, for a while you were on a sabbatical. You were working on a project. Tell us what that was.
Well, all it really was, it was through the Marquette Law School, and it was basically just to give me the freedom to go back frequently to Wisconsin and kind of roam around the state and talk to voters, which is something that, you know, you think reporters normally do, but we don't always have the time in the day-to-day, you know, kind of bustle of the job to do it as much as you'd like. And so I just spent more time during this fellowship, and also since the fellowship, I continued to do it. So I would say dating back to September of last year, so for more than a year, would get back to the state generally once a month for about a week and spend most of that time just kind of buttonholing people, talking to voters about President Trump, Governor Walker, about the media, about guns, about taxes, about the election climate, about a lot of different things. And it's, as you can imagine, along with, you know, having all the kind of numbers and data and kind of wisdom of political insiders, it's invaluable, really, to talk to as many regular voters as possible.
Are people as polarized as the numbers would show, or is there more nuance to this?
There's definitely more nuance. I mean, one of the things that's kind of striking is, and part of it is just, you know, when you look at the numbers, it's a little bit deceiving. I mean, you sort of, we often paint this picture of everybody in warring camps. And obviously, a lot of people fall in between those warring camps to the degree that they are not hardcore bitter partisans, that they are not, you know, most people are not that ideological, and a lot of people are not that partisan. We're definitely more partisan than we used to be, and there's a lot of, I think, factors driving us apart and driving us into partisan camps, and certainly voting behavior is more partisan, but the other part of that story is that there's a considerable number of people who, you know, they may be voting generally with one party or the other, but it's because they're sort of forced into starker choices than they would like, and they, you know, you hear, political scientists tend to dismiss this, but you do hear a lot of people saying, God, I wish the two parties would work together. So there is some nuance to that. And there's even some nuance to how people feel about someone as polarizing as President Trump. I mean, all the people that voted for him aren't 100% Trump backers.
Isn't that interesting? Well, and there's obviously a big gender gap in Wisconsin. If you look at a map from Wisconsin in a competitive race from 10, 15 years ago, it looks a little different. Deindustrialization has played a role in that in places like Sheboygan and Manitowoc. And yet, Wisconsin kind of joined some other states where the urban areas turned out in massive numbers. Tell us about what happened in Wisconsin in 2018.
Well, it's pretty staggering. I mean, let's start with the urban areas. I mean, of course, you have the big two Democratic cities in Milwaukee and Madison. Madison has been much more reliable in terms of turning out in midterm elections. And Milwaukee even had, you know, didn't really turn out in the last presidential election. So I think they certainly they both turned out this time, but the margins were staggering in Milwaukee. And again, what's striking about this is when you compare 2018 to 2014, the last two governor's races, we're talking about the same incumbent, Scott Walker. So it's the same candidate. And so in 2014, when Scott Walker won statewide by about 6 points, he got a vote margin in Milwaukee County of about 98,000 votes. He got a vote margin on last week. He had a deficit
right.
of 98,000 votes. He had a deficit last week in Milwaukee County of about 140,000 votes, which is a pretty staggering increase against the same candidate one election later. And then in Madison, in Dane County, the Democratic margin, and Dane County turned out pretty well in 2014. But the Democratic vote margin went from 100,000 votes to 150,000 votes. And Dane County turned out at something like 95% of its presidential turnout, just in terms of total votes cast. So it just, you know, it's kind of mind-boggling. When you think that there's not that much room to grow, it grew like the margins grew and the turnout grew like crazy for Democrats in Dane County. And, again, against the same candidate 4 years later. And that those two counties obviously had a profound, they didn't entirely account for the decline in Scott Walker's statewide margins, but it was well above his losing margin, and that's having a profound impact.
We've been hearing a lot about millennials and voting. Were there many new voters in this election, especially in places like Dane and Milwaukee County?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell at this point. In the exit polls, they did ask people if they were first-time voters, and I think that number is pretty small, but I don't know how it compares to past elections. I don't even know if it's a reliable guide. So, you know, there have to have been a lot of people voting who weren't reliable midterm voters, just when you consider the fact that you had, you know, close to 60% or maybe more, 60% of voting age adults turning out in the state, most by far ever. And in 2014, it was 55%, and that was number two in the country. So, you know, biggest midterm turnout ever, both in raw numbers and as a share of voting age adults. So clearly there were people voting that don't consistently vote in midterm elections.
Well, Madison has a transient population. There's a large number of people coming in from all over the country and all over the world. Of course, not people all over the world couldn't vote, but people from all over the country. Going to work for Epic and other software companies. So obviously there's it's a place where it's growing. There's new lifeblood.
Yeah, people, you know, I spent a lot of time earlier this year in Dane County writing about that phenomenon. And one of the questions I got was, well, all this growth and all the people at Epic and all the people who are moving here from out of state, do they share the sort of politics of Dane County as it exists now? And are they going to vote Democratic? And are they going to vote? And they certainly, if you look at the numbers, it certainly seems like they did. Just because, again, I mean, it is the fastest growing county of its size in the Midwest. And the combination, it's really unique in its combination of size, growth, turnout and mobilization, and how blue it is. I mean, there's really nothing else quite like it. So it's, it's obviously a boon to Democrat in statewide elections and a problem for Republicans because they have to find the votes elsewhere to kind of offset it. It doesn't help Democrats in legislative and congressional races.
Correct.
Its impact is kind of confined geographically.
So it's interesting in that, if Dane County didn't do what Dane County did, Wisconsin could look a lot more like Indiana.
It could. I mean, I think you have to be careful about sort of playing that game just because, you could sort of say on the other side, if the WOW counties weren't as Republican as they are and go back in time, you could say, well, and the suburbs of Milwaukee were as Democratic as they are in Philadelphia, then Wisconsin would look like, New Jersey or some much bluer mm-hmm. state. But it's certainly true that, the statewide elections are often, are shaped and influenced by what's happening in regions of the state. And it just so happens that in Wisconsin, for one reason or another, and maybe it's just completely accidental, I don't know, all the churn and all the shifting that's going on below the statewide level, whether it's the suburbs or whether it's the rural areas or whether it's these blue cities, it's all kind of netted out and in a way that keeps the state very competitive politically.
And this is happening around the country, where urban areas are becoming more Democratic and rural areas are becoming more Republican. You look at what happened in Oklahoma City. That wasn't on anybody's radar screen, but it made kind of perfect sense. The the mayor of Oklahoma City, who was a Republican, Republican lost in the primary at sort of an up-and-coming area. So now there's a House seat held by Democrats in Deep Red, Oklahoma. And we saw that in a number of places.
Yeah, and what's interesting here when we're talking about Wisconsin and the very Republican suburban counties outside Milwaukee is that they have, you know, there hasn't been a long-term trend in many cities, particularly many northern cities, where the suburbs have become less Republican. The suburbs, the suburban counties outside Milwaukee, you know, like Waukesha, have defied that trend until recently. In fact, they had just continued to become more Republican up until and through the 2014 election. And then in the last two election cycles, in the last presidential race, you know, Donald Trump did worse than Mitt Romney in those suburban, you know, in the outer Milwaukee suburbs, where he did better almost everywhere else. And Scott Walker did worse in 2018 when you look at his vote margins than he did in 2014. So two election cycles in a row in which suddenly those suburban counties outside Milwaukee are not defying that national trend, but they have shown signs of becoming, you know, slightly less Republican. They're still pretty Republican, but it raises questions about their direction in the future. And again, that's another thing that's going to have a potentially profound impact on statewide elections in Wisconsin.
We'll pick it up from there. Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with us at slysoffice.com. We'll take a break and be right back.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who's going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome back to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, our friends, Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters Local 311, also Madison Teamsters Local 695. Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with us. We're talking about the 2018 election and trends that he sees going on. When you say that the suburbs of Milwaukee County, the Ring of Fire, as I call it, but the WOW counties, what parts are becoming less Republican? You know, that's a wide swatch.
Yeah, so they are the more, for want of a better word, upscale, you know, higher education, more white-collar communities. I mean, places like, and I haven't looked at the local returns in for last week's election, but I know in 2016, so they were, it certainly happened in the suburbs of Milwaukee County. I mean, the community that moved the most away from the Republicans between Romney and Trump was Whitefish Bay, which used to be a classically Republican inner suburb in Milwaukee County. But then the places in these Republican counties in the outer suburbs that also kind of underperformed were Trump, were places like Cedarburg and Mequon and Ozaukee County, and places like Elm Grove and some of the smaller, wealthier communities in Waukesha County. And so at the county level, it's happening, I think, in Ozaukee more than anywhere else, because that is the most kind of well-to-do and high education county in the state, I believe, certainly among the counties we're talking about, and then Waukesha, and less so in Washington, which is more blue-collar than Washington County, the county northwest of Milwaukee County. So it really does seem to match up with those kind of, with the socioeconomics of these counties, even though they're all in the same media market. Again, they remain Republican, but the question is, how are they trending? And again, what's striking about what happened, you know, we saw it obviously in 2016 with Trump, but what's so striking about it, the fact that it happened in 2018, is that you had a Republican governor on the ballot, and this was his bedrock. I mean, this was his base. So he was different than Trump. And so that's pretty interesting that it would still happen. And again, we don't know how much of it is, if any, is people switching, and how much of it is Democrats in those counties just turning out more. And over the long run, we don't know how much of it is also the composition of the counties changing, too.
And then what about the out, outstate. You did a piece about the media markets and are some Trump voters abandoning Trump, where they voted for Trump in 2016 but voted for Democrats in 2018.
Yeah, I think
did that come to fruition?
Only in a kind of a limited way. I think certainly the more significant factors were what happened in southern Wisconsin in both the blue cities and blue suburbs as well as the red suburbs. But if you look at that map, the Walker vote compared to 2014 actually increased. His margins actually increased in the small counties in central and northern Wisconsin where Trump had most outperformed Romney. Again, these two elections, the trends for president in 2016 and for governor in 2018 just matched up so well. But then the two places where they fell off were the bigger, more, I guess, urban and suburban counties of the Fox Valley, mm-hmm. where, you know, Brown County, Winnebago County, Outagamie County, Calumet, those were the places in the Green Bay media market where there was a bit of a drop-off in Scott Walker's margins. In fact, those four counties accounted for the entire drop-off in the Green Bay media market, which is a big media market. It goes all the way up to Michigan and everything else he kind of held serve. And the other place was, the famous southwestern Wisconsin, which is not a lot of people, but really interesting political history, very swingy, and included a ton of Obama-Trump communities, places that swung a lot in the last presidential election, and they swung back to some degree in this election. So those two places, have a history of being maybe the swingiest places in Wisconsin, which is sort of parts of the Fox Valley and that southwestern Wisconsin, more rural area, which is different from other rural parts of the state in its voting history.
In turnout, I was told before the election, people that know these things, the different models for turnout, that Democrats would have benefited had it been a particular type of low turnout. Mm-hmm. An average turnout would have benefited Republicans, and a high turnout would have benefited Democrats.
Well, I think there's some truth to that, although I don't even know if we can be that precise about it, because obviously in the end, it's not just how many people turn out, but it's who turned out.
Right.
But you can certainly see that I think it's true that certainly some of the low turnout scenarios would have very much favored Democrats in the sense that we knew that Democrats were mobilized, and that was demonstrated in the special elections, demonstrated in the polling. We didn't know for sure. The bigger X factor was whether Republicans were mobilized. And so had it been a lower turnout election where you had the outpouring in Dane County and Democrats around the state, there was an enthusiasm gap, then I think this would have been a different election. I think you would have seen Tony Evers win by several points. But that didn't really happen. I mean, the Democrats turned out, but it was not a bad turnout election for Republicans at all. In fact, one of the most striking things about the exit polls was that Donald Trump's approval rating in the statewide exit poll, this is the poll of people who actually voted, including people who voted early, it was 48%, which is higher than it had been in any of the pre-election polling. So that tells you that the composition of the electorate was pretty balanced, including, according to the exit poll, equal numbers of Democrats and Republican voters. So it wasn't just the Democratic areas that turned out. And I think so that also bears with what you're saying, where at a certain point, higher turnout was helpful to Scott Walker. But at the same time, in the end, the fact that one component of that super high turnout statewide was not only Dane County turning out in truly staggering numbers, but also Milwaukee County, very robust turnout. And that really, in the end, was incredibly helpful to Democrats.
So, interesting U.S. Senate race. Tammy Baldwin had a significant victory. Was that a real race? I know a lot of money was spent early on for the Republicans.
Yeah.
But can we get and it looks like we have some people that split their tickets. This is the first time we've seen that in a long time. Not a huge number, but some.
Yeah.
Normally the numbers have been matching up quite evenly up and down the ticket. This time they didn't. She had a bit of an edge. Was that a real race, or is it hard to read that one?
I think yes and no. I mean, it's a real race in the sense that they had to run that race. They had to run a real race to get there. I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, she was a target of a lot of early advertising. They clearly ran a very effective campaign, but they had to run a real race to get to the point where they were really outperforming the other side, but not as much a real race as the governor's race in the sense that it doesn't necessarily tell you what the state looks like in a super competitive race, and it may not be as useful a guide or a barometer looking ahead to the 2020 presidential race as the governor's race, because you did have a situation where you had an incumbent who started with some advantages, including being in the party out of power and also being an incumbent and having money, against a candidate who was a first-time statewide candidate who wasn't very well-known, who had to run a rough primary, and in the end didn't turn out to be a particularly effective statewide candidate in Leah Vukmir. So, again, when you look at how Tammy Baldwin performed, and she performed very impressively with outside the Democratic base, I mean, she did really well in the Fox Valley for a Democrat. She did pretty well among rural and blue-collar white voters for a Democrat. But I think you have to, there's some caveats there in terms of how, you know, can Democrats do this, replicate that, you know, in a different circumstance.
Well, she took the Made in America and trade issue, which obviously Trump feels strongly about, and for her, to her credit, at least from my perspective, it's something she has felt, you know, strongly about for a long time, and she made those issues hers before Vukmir could even go on the air.
She did, and I think it also just points, when you talk to, you know, I think a lot of the smart people on the Democratic side, they'll tell you that for some of these areas outside Milwaukee and Madison, to the north, even to the west, you know, it can't just turn into a cultural race for Democrats. I mean, you have to have a strong economic message. You have to deliver it, you know, in a kind of a persuasive way, and be persuasive and credible in how you deliver it. And so there is a way, and we've seen other Democrats be very competitive, again, with some of these parts of the state and some of these voting groups where Trump did well. You know, obviously Obama was very competitive with these groups, and Jim Doyle in 2006. There is a way for Democrats to be competitive, reasonably competitive, with voters outside their demographic and geographic base. And I think Tammy Baldwin kind of showed that to some degree.
Looking forward, what are you working on? Where are you going as far as, you know, Wisconsin goes?
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit more kind of general postmortem, but I'm also doing a piece on, I did a piece along with a couple of other reporters about the famous blue wall for USA Today, which is the Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, the three states that flipped, delivering the presidency to Donald Trump, that had three states that had been voting consistently Democratic for president. I'm doing a piece right now that zeroes in on sort of Wisconsin, and just, you know, we're not going to have a governor's race next time in 2020. We're not going to have a Senate race, but we're going to have, you know, a pretty compelling presidential battleground situation in Wisconsin. I don't have any doubt about that. I mean, if you just look at the map and how close it's been, when the national race is close, you know, every time the national race has been close since over the last couple of decades, Wisconsin has been on a knife's edge. And so,
right,
when you think about it, its importance to the Trump side, and then you think about its importance to Democrats, and Democrats sort of internalizing the lesson from 2016 of the cost of not competing here and not traveling here, which Hillary Clinton didn't do. It's just, I think the factors are adding up that we're going to see, I think, Wisconsin's going to be more highly targeted than any presidential election since 2004, when it was like a top, not just a top five target, it was like a top three target in some ways. And I think it's going to be more like that. I mean, it's all going to depend on who the candidate is on the Democratic side and how that race shapes out. But, you know, if nothing else changes on the map, Democrats have to win Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And a whole lot else may not change in the map, because you've got, in this midterm election, I mean, Nevada and Colorado and Virginia sort of reinforce their status as very blue-leaning battlegrounds. And then you had Democrats struggling in some of the other Sun Belt places, and certainly struggling in Florida, although it's really close. They did win a Senate race in Arizona where it was really close. So Democrats do have some opportunities to expand the map elsewhere, but still, Ohio and Iowa seem to be falling away from Democrats. And
could
so
be, although if Sherrod Brown, you picked the right candidate, and amazing how suddenly you're competitive.
And although his race was even closer than some Democrats were expecting, and certainly their defeat for governor Ohio was bigger than some Democrats thought it would be. So it's all speculation at this point, but I just think under any scenario, the blue wall states, and Wisconsin particularly, because I think of the three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, I think Wisconsin is it's certainly very doable for Democrats to pick it up again, but it's probably a little tougher than Pennsylvania and Michigan when you look at their voting history. So I think just everything points to Wisconsin being really hotly contested, and that's going to something that's kind of be, I think it's going to shape the political landscape in this state for the next 2 years.
Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, thank you so much for coming on with us today. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
All right, thank you.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.